You're where?
In Bali.
In Bali?
The AP Nation.
Hi, Tina. It's Glenn.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you in Bali?
I'm doing good. We just finished up the AP-TLD meeting last night, and so I'm out of here today.
Oh.
It's a really nice place, though, I gotta say.
Not even spending an extra couple of days, huh?
Well, I'm going straight up to a Linux Forum, 10-year anniversary of Linux Forum in Copenhagen.
Excuse me,
and,
Paul Diaz now joined.
And even though it's a snowstorm there, I'm really looking forward to the meeting. I'm going to go talk about IDN to a group of, like, 5,000 application developers.
My word.
Ooh. But that's a time, Tina.
Yep.
Welcome, Kerry.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Welcome, Steve.
Hi there. I'm back in my home country.
Ah, that's even better.
Thank you very much for setting things up while I was traveling.
Pleasure.
Excuse me, Ram Mohan now joins.
Welcome, Ram.
Good day. How are you, Glenn?
Fine, thanks. We've got William Tan, Avery Doria, Tina Dam, Paul Diaz, Kerry Karp, and Steve Crocker on the call, Ram.
Excellent. Thank you. Welcome. And we'll just wait for just a couple of minutes and then get the call kicked off.
Hi, it's Maria joining.
Good evening, Mr. Mike Rodenbaugh has joined.
Good evening, Maria. This is Ram.
Hi, Ram.
It's Mike Rodenbaugh as well. Hi, Ram.
Hello, Mike.
Welcome, Mike.
Morning.
Excuse me, Will Roger joins.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Will.
Mr. Kurt Pritz has joined.
Okay.
Glenn, what's the code for today's call?
Oh, okay. Let me give it to you. It's 368-9038.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
And how do we mute?
Star 6.
Okay.
Was an agenda circulated in advance of this meeting?
No, this is Ram. We are really following an agenda that was set two meetings ago, where we were talking about, you know, we had a specific set of items to discuss. And in our meeting last week, we had two items of which we covered ground, quite a bit of ground in the first, but not enough in the second. And our plan was to cover ground on the second item, which is existing GTLD strings, and then carry forward to our priority 3 item.
No problem. I just was, you know, looking for it, so don't want to keep doing that. Thanks, Ron.
We're just going to wait a couple more minutes and then get going. It's about 2-3 minutes after the hour. We'll just wait another couple of minutes and then get started.
Yes, Maggie Mansorkia now joins.
Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you.
We're literally about a minute away from getting kicked off here.
Okay, great. And I will have to jump off a little bit early, so I'll apologize in advance.
No problem.
Excuse me, Sophia Batelli now joins.
Welcome, Sophia.
Hello, Ron.
We're just about to get started here.
Great, thanks.
Okay, we're just a few minutes after the hour. Glenn, let's get the call going. If you could start the recording and then go to a roll call, please.
I'll do that, Ron. We have on the call William Tan, Avery Doria, Tina Dam from Scottstaff, Paul Diaz, Terry Karp, Steve Crocker.
Here.
Yourself, Maria Farrell, staff, in place of Olaf, who is excused, Mike Rodenbach, Will Roger, Kurt Pritz, staff, Maggie Mansukia, and Sophia Bekele.
Thank you and welcome. And Glenn, you started the recording, I'm assuming.
I will check, Ron.
While Glenn is checking on that, I just wanted to...
Started, Ron.
Thank you. And welcome to this call on February 27th. What we have been doing is really following an agenda that we set forth in the in our meeting on February the 6th, where we had the working group prioritize on behalf of everybody really provide me guidance on where to allocate our time, with a primary focus of our time going on introduction of new GTLDs, followed by geopolitical details, existing GTLD strings, and then existing domain name holders and technopolicy details. Those are really, that's been the direction that I've received from the working group in terms of places to focus our time and attention. Last week on the call, for those of you who attended and for those of you who have listened in onto the MP3 recording, you will find that we had a vigorous discussion on geopolitical details, and we actually have some clear directions forward that are going to make their way into a draft document that will come your way here shortly. We began a discussion on existing GTLD strings and the allocation of existing GTLD strings, and we ran out of time. And what I promised in our call last week was that we would place allocation of existing GTLD strings at the top of the agenda for today, and in association with that topic, also get into a discussion of existing domain name holders and any issues that might that we would like to discuss on that area. In addition to that, really, if we have enough time, we will go and start to discuss technopolicy details, or else what we will do is discuss technopolicy details in next week's call. What we also intend to do, Maria and I have started work on a draft report document that starts to document what we have discussed and areas where we think there might be some level of broad agreement, in other areas where there has been just discussion or there has been support or different positions taken, and we'll have that ready for you to review in the next couple of days, and then we will finish our discussion on techno policy details, and then go forward from there. In our meeting of March the 13th, we will discuss. Really, most of our time will be spent discussing the draft document. Our goal is on March 20th to finalize this draft document, to actually get it to a final format, and to publish it to the GNSO Council on the 21st of March. And we're at this point still on schedule to go and get there. And as you may recall, this working group actually comes to a conclusion and completes its activities at the end of the Lisbon meeting, and I suspect that I'll be asked to make a presentation or two at Lisbon to the council, as well as to potentially other constituencies as required. And I will provide a copy of a slide deck also for our working group to comment on before that that happens. Now, one of the things that we did do last week, which was earlier promised, was to go through the to ask the membership of the working group if they thought that in addition to techno policy details and existing domain name holders, if any of the other topics that we had earlier said should not really get allocated much of our time and attention, whether any of those topics should get our time and attention. And I will ask that question again here and request that if you believe that there are other topics that require our time and attention, to provide that to the list, and I will call that question to the list shortly, because we have really pretty much one face-to-face, one conference call left before we get into discussing our draft document. Before we launch into discussing existing domain name holders and existing GTLD strings, I wanted to take a moment and ask if there are any other agenda items that the working group members on this call would like to see discussed today.
Ron, it's Marilyn. I just want to announce myself. I was a bit late. My apologies.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah?
Sophia, hi.
Hi. Just a couple of administrative things. Maybe you can put a band. One has to do perhaps with what was just submitting some of the paperwork or the summaries that I guess you just mentioned earlier that you're working with Maria on some of the items after we complete the calls. So just to get an early notice of the draft that's been discussed so we could comment on them before we go on a call.
Yes, Sophia, the plan is to get that draft out by the end of this week.
Yeah, for example.
As soon as we have something that is actually presentable, and it'll be in draft format, and the goal is to really spend a good 2 weeks working through the document so that we get to March 13th and we can say yay or nay on the document.
Okay, so you're talking about the overall draft, not by this priority group draft document. I misunderstood. I was thinking maybe last week, for those of us who are not on the geopolitical detail group, I thought you said there was a document coming our way now on some of the issues. Maybe you were saying it's the bigger draft paper?
Yes, that's correct. I'm sorry if I misspoke, but yeah, there is a bigger draft that's coming, and I'm turning, frankly, more and more of my attention onto that document because that is our final work product. And I'm starting to focus much more of my attention, and I'd like to focus our working group's attention on that work product and to kind of direct our time and energy on building a document that discusses items that we think might, are appropriate for the GNSO Council to think of a PDP process.
Understand. Okay, the other one I had commented, I think I responded to Maria's email to us regarding a proposal made by Merlin and last week on the geopolitical names and geographic names. And I just kind of made a comment, and if you want to talk about it later, it's sort of administrative, but it's about defining the roles of people have on this working group against any other one in order to streamline the job so that, you know, whoever is assigned as an expert or the liaison and so forth could work on a narrow issue and bring it to the group versus, you know, the way it's proposed. So maybe I have a little concern on how it's proposed, so we can talk about it at the end. I just want to raise it up as an issue because I responded to it. We can talk about it now.
Let me see if I understand So the agenda item you would like to propose is discussion of the role of a liaison, or?
No, just the role of liaisons and experts, and if we're going to keep on defining this kind of things, you know, with the small time that we have until Lisbon, and probably you can call it roles and of people as it's to streamlining the process, the working group, so. It's more of an administrative, but I think it's very important.
I agree. Okay, I'll certainly schedule that on our agenda and make sure that we cover that today. Thank you. Are there any other suggested agenda items?
Well, I have one to suggest, which is to really start off our call perhaps with a brief report from Sophia, perhaps yourself, and I could provide that as well in terms of what was discussed at the Reserve Names Working Group, because we provided expert advice as well as liaison into the working group in the recently concluded meeting, face-to-face meeting in LA just a couple of days ago. That's the only other agenda item that I would like to propose before we get started on.
Rob, there's a procedural issue that we've looked at but have actually not done anything about that might actually be opportune, especially given a suggestion to the GNSO Council that Bruce recently made about opening our working groups to broader participation of observers. And that's simply the pro forma declaration of interest. And there are a lot of people on this call who I suspect are very interested in submitting bids for IDN PLDs, and those same people are involved in the discussion that will end up influencing the terms of reference for that call. And at the very least, I think this sort of stuff has to be openly declared up front to avoid real unpleasantness just a little bit further down the road. Marilyn raised this issue a couple of weeks ago, and I stupidly decided that it was a good opportunity to inject some merriment into the discussion, and I regret having done that. So if we can revisit that issue, it might be useful.
Thank you, Kerry. I'll certainly add that as well to our list of items to discuss. So perhaps then I'm going to suggest the following agenda and time allocation for today. We'll spend the next 15 minutes or so with the Reserve Names Working Group report, the declaration of interest, as well as discussion of role of liaison and experts, and then basically about 30 minutes or so into the hour, get into our topic. Of the on IDNs itself, if that works with everybody.
Fine.
Thanks. Sophia, could I call upon you to provide a brief report on the Reserve Names Working Group meeting that was held in LA last week?
Ram, I would love to do that, but since the role of liaison is something that I asked you today, I think I will defer that to you because you were on the call. That is not a report that I have prepared, or I'm not sure if that role called. I apologize if I was unsure, but I'm not at all prepared for that.
Okay, no problem. I guess my perspective was to provide an informal kind of summarization of general topics that were discussed rather than an actual report into the meeting. Let me provide my recollections. I do not have prepared notes on this at this point either. And I would like to request, Sophia, that, you know, perhaps we can come together and do provide some notes from the meeting. The reserve names, so I'm just going to provide a general report to all of you on the working group here. The reserve names working group met in person. I was not there in person. There were a couple of members on this group who were there in person. Sophia, I believe, Marilyn, I believe, were there in person. I don't recall who else was there in person on this call. The reserve names working group discussed a draft document that spoke about what kinds of names and what kinds of categories to reserve. In the area of IDNs, the recommendation that we had made was to recommend that at the top level and at other levels, at the second level as well, domain names that kind of conform to the characteristic of character hyphen hyphen be generally reserved. And Avri Doria, who was there in person, also I think was there in person, but Avri made a friendly amendment, which was that unless such names, character hyphen hyphen domains, are approved for use by some appropriate authority. That was at a very high level, that was the outcome of the IDN input into the reserve names working group. If there are others who were on the call or who were on the reserve name working group meeting last week, if you'd like to add anything to what I was saying, please feel free now.
Hey, Ron, this is Tina in the queue.
Tina, you're in the queue. You have the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Crocker.
So, I wasn't at the last call, but I'm on the reserve names mailing list as well. And we just finished the APTLD meeting here in Bali, and one of the topics on their agenda was exactly the reserve names working group this IDN working group. And one of the things that the APTLD group came up with was that they were a little bit concerned that the reserve names working group was working, really fast and potentially without input from either APTLD or perhaps CCNSO or at least some CCTLD consortium or the GAC, because according to the people at the APTLD meeting, they want to have reserved, the localized equivalent of, for example, the current country codes, or maybe they, that was one definite thing that they agreed on. And since we don't have the list of internationalized country codes, or I don't really know what terminology to use for it, but anyways, I hope you know what I mean. But since we don't have that list, it's kind of hard to put it on the reserved list. The other comment that they had was that they thought that they needed, they being the CCNSO and the GAC, needed to take a look at whether you should translate and transliterate geographic names or at least country names and have those reserved at the second level as well.
Rob, it's Marilyn.
So there's going to come some input from the APTLD meeting into the reserved names group.
Ron, would you put me in the queue on this topic?
And me as well, Ron.
Absolutely, Marilyn. I have Steve Crocker in the queue, and then Marilyn.
And I put Avery in the queue also, please.
And Avery. Okay, Steve, you have the floor.
Yeah, very briefly. I want to echo essentially the same sentiment as Tina, but from a very technical perspective in response to Avery's comment. I think the general posture ought to be relatively conservative in terms of reserving names, because this only goes in one direction. So if you allocate too much to begin with, you can't get it back.
And with to XX hyphen hyphen, I think that kind of suggestion, wherever it came from, is motivated by trying to reserve special characters for future purposes, and I would probably like to expand that. I haven't studied it, and I think we ought to get some technical people to look at it, but in general, we ought to stay within a fairly conservative set and then leave all of the punctuation and special characters for the purposes of being able to expand later. So it just strikes me that XX hyphen hyphen is the beginning rather than the end of the what that reserve ought to be from a technical perspective.
Thank you, Steve. Marilyn, you're in the queue and you have the floor.
Thanks. Can I, it's Marilyn, let me speak as the of the statement of work on the reserve name working group about the intent. I don't think Chuck Gomes, who is the second author on that and the chair of the group, is here, but let me just assure everybody that in the statement of work, and I'll take this back to him as well, in the statement of work, the intent was to study things, not to rush to judgment, to take input from the, Rob, I'm going to borrow your word, which I think is techno-political aspects of making any changes on any category of reserve name, take the information into account, decide whether there's any low-hanging fruit, make recommendations in many cases about longer study and analysis. So I think, in fact, I'm working on two of the subgroups. One is the second letter, the single letter and two letter categories of characters, and the other is controversial names. But I'm really confident, Tina, that this is exactly the kind of input that the subgroups want and need. The idea that we've talked about, and it's just really good to reinforce it and maybe even invite Chuck Gomes as the chair to comment on it, Ram, is that it's important to carve out the space to allow further discussion and examination before recommendations are made, but also remember that the purpose of the reserve name working group is to present recommendations to the council, not to make any decisions themselves, because they're just a working group. And now I'll just say something about Steve Crocker, who, Steve, you're high on the list of at least one of the groups I'm on to spend some more time talking about symbols. So I hope that's at least reassuring about the intent of the group.
I was muted, but thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you, Marilyn. I was muted, which is why I was already responding to you.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to comment on two things. One, following up on what Marilyn said about the subgroups, the one on the geographic names hasn't really done anything yet. So while we're moving quite quickly, this is something that we're still at, and I agree with Marilyn, we have to take all these other things into account. And I just wanted to, for Steve and others, since I was the one that put in the friendly amendment, the amendment had been, the original statement had been no changes be made in tag name reservation requirement, in other words, the XN-, and that was reserving all CC-dashes. And the change that I've recommended was no changes be made in the tag names reservation requirement at the second level without standardization activity and appropriate IANA registration. So the idea behind this was it pretty much stays as it is, but if the IETF or perhaps some other standardization group does an activity, defines another tag, and the proper rules and methods of doing it, and, you know, IANA accepts it, then at that point, people could think about having a different tag, but certainly not willy-nilly and certainly not, you know, just open. So, but also not tightly closed. If someone does the work through the IETF, define another tagging method, then it could get in become in use. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. Any other discussion on this topic?
Ram, it's Meryl, and I just have one. We're transcribing this call. I think it would be really helpful if Glenn might clip this section of the transcription and forward it into the reserve name working group. In the meantime, Aubrey and myself and anyone else who is and the liaison, Sophia, can be sure that this topic is put on the agenda for the reserve name working group this Thursday. Aren't you going to actually participate in that call? Are you, Ram?
That's my plan, yes.
Okay. So maybe we could you could be in touch with Chuck and make sure that this is very high, very early in the working agenda for discussion?
Absolutely, and I'll coordinate with Sophia as well on this. But thank you. Okay. The second item that is on our agenda today is, with the broader participation of observers, Carrie has raised a point that perhaps we need to get to declaration of interest, that the interests of the parties who are attending or who are members of the working group be openly declared. I'd like to open this topic up for discussion, and I just want to warn you that I'll probably allow a short discussion and then request that the rest of the discussion, if it's going to be longer, move to the list.
This is Aubrey. Can I be in the list?
Aubrey, you're in the queue.
And it's Marilyn to be in the list with a proposal.
Marilyn, you're in the queue. Anyone else?
Sophia.
Sophia, anyone else? Okay, Aubrey.
Yeah, this is something that we've done in all the other groups. It's a quick one or two paragraphs saying who you are, what your involvement is, where you work, and why you're participating in this. I think it's a great idea, and it doesn't need to take a lot of anyone's time.
Thank you, Aubrey. Marilyn?
And my concrete proposal builds on what Aubrey said. I think it's also incredibly important for the integrity and respect that people have. But the important thing for people to understand is that it isn't that it's bad to have an interest. It's that it's important to declare the interest and be transparent about it.
Thank you, Marilyn. Sophia?
Okay, I'm confused again. Are we talking about the existing working group or bringing people from outside of this working group?
I think we're talking about the existing working group, the working group as it is constituted or in other words, the working group as it is constituted, and if there are other people joining the working group, everybody who is a member of the working group mailing list would have to conform. I'm assuming, Carrie, that's what you intended.
I would like to see a very clear precedent established before there is any influx into this working group.
Okay. The only comment I have is that is this is any new people to be added to this working group that had shown interest has been something we've talked about the last 3 weeks, and it's supposed to be at the GNSO level versus the working group. I would love to see this working group acquiesce or agree to getting participants from outside so it could assist getting people in. But if we're talking about the already existing group and we didn't provide statement of interest and so forth, then definitely I would agree with both Avery and Marilyn. But if we're talking anything outside of that, I think that probably requires a separate discussion and or talking with Bruce again, because the last discussion I had with him in L.A., was he opened it up to observer level status for anyone interested to come into the IDN working group. However, he wanted to get the consensus of everybody on the council to see if there is any opposition to such practices, because there has been new people added to the reserve name working group, for example. So the prior stringent requirement of having to be a member of GNSO Council, constituency and so forth, has been dismissed in my, that's my understanding, and now we can take in people as observer status, and there are people interested to come in. So if we're going to do it at our level, then I would like to know, because I would like to communicate with the people that are around me that want to join in. So there are twofold issues. One is, if it's for the existing group, yes, I would agree with what was said, and if it is for some anybody we're recruiting or interested to come in, then we would like to have a separate chat about it or agreement just to get a consensus of everyone, and then we can move it on the agenda.
May I respond directly to that as a counselor?
Carrie, just a moment. Sophia, let me just paraphrase what I thought I heard you say. A, you agree about working group members providing the declarations of interest, and B, what you're saying is whether observers should be added or not is a topic of separate discussion, and should observers be added, do you have a perspective on those observers providing a declaration of interest?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Does the group agree on that, and can we take that to Bruce and say we have agreed on it or not?
Okay, I mean, my takeaway so far on the discussion, and actually before I get to the takeaway, Carrie, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, I just want to note that Bruce has made a proposal to the council. This proposal has not been discussed by council. No decision has been taken by council, so it would certainly be premature to issue any invitation under the assumption that the terms in the current wording of that proposal will be adopted.
Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate it. I think really all what we're going to be doing here is it seems like regardless of observer status, it seems like there is strong support for the declaration of interest to be provided by each member of the working group. So I'm going to request then that, Glenn, if you could put out a request to the working group members to provide such a declaration of interest. They could do it either directly post it to the list or give it to you, and you could compile it and post it to the list. Either way is fine. It's fine. Thank you. Our next topic.
I would just propose to the group that standard requirements would be would apply to everyone who participates in the group as it comes to making a statement of interest. I will just speak in support of that decision about allowing the observers to be made quickly.
Thank you. I'd like to move now to discussing existing GTLD strings and tying that to existing domain name holders as a straight up topic. Now, just to be clear, what we've meant in the past by existing GTLD strings is really about allocation of existing GTLD strings. In our discussions last week, just to quickly summarize, some of the notes that come out are the following. One, use of a particular string in a non-IDN representation may not automatically follow to the IDN representation. There is also, at the registrant level, there may not be an expectation of carryover of an existing GTLD string to an IDN representation. And also, there has been some discussion that just because someone registered a domain name in a non-IDN TLD, they should not be granted or do not have any right to that name at the IDN TLD level. There was also some commentary last week that at the top level of the domain name, we need to be cautious about assuming that just because a registry is allocated management of the string of a non-IDN string at a top level, that ICANN was allocating all the rights regarding how the name appears in IDNs as well. The other piece of discussion that has come up so far is that perhaps sponsored communities and sponsored top-level domains should be treated differently than an unsponsored string. Carrie Karp has posted something to this in this general area to the list that I will recommend for you to read through before you comment on that topic in this discussion. There was also one telling comment made last week, which was that perhaps there is no difference in principle between the allocation of IDN strings when it comes to the root as compared to the second level. In other words, existing rights apply the same way at the second level as they do at the top level. So that's, I provide this as a summary of discussion points. We have not actually gathered these into areas of broad support or broad agreement, et cetera. But I mentioned this in terms of what's been discussed so far, and I open the floor for discussion on this topic today, now.
Ram, can we perhaps go one by one in what you said so we can comment on it, on the points you made?
Sure.
That's easier to tackle, I guess.
Sure, no problem. The first set of comments that were made was that at the registrant level, for existing domain name holders, there is not an expectation that just because you're a registrant at a second level for a non-IDN TLD, that you have a right automatically in an equivalent IDN TLD. There might be certain rights that can be claimed due to other policy or other properties, but there is no inherent right just because one is a registrant of a domain name at the second level in a non-IDN TLD.
Can I ask a question, Mrs. Aubrey?
Sure,
Aubrey. Okay, I'm not quite sure what you're looking for. You're looking for people to say whether they agree with that. I'm glad you went through it the second time, because the first time I thought you were making a descriptive statement as opposed to a normative one. So, but here you're recommending a normative statement, correct?
Actually, I guess I'm making a normative statement, and I'm asking for pushback or acceptance.
Okay.
And so, Ron, it's Marilyn. So would you just, for those of us who, I'm beginning to think I'm not English speaking, would you just give me a concrete example using a couple of illustrations, do you mind?
I can try.
Okay.
And I need help from all the rest of you when I fumble on this. So for instance, if I own Mohan.com.
If you hold Mohan.com.
I hold, if I'm the registrant of Mohan.com as represented in a non-IDN fashion.
Right.
Let us say there is an equivalent of .com in an IDN string, that I, as the registrant of Mohan in the non-IDN string, do not have automatically some pre-existing right merely because I am the domain name registrant.
Okay, it's Marilyn again, and I want to back up for a minute. First of all, I think when we say an equivalent of an existing legacy ASCII character string such as .com, .info, .biz, one of the challenges that we need to look at, I think, is what is an equivalent? So is an equivalent the word commerce or business in a IDN, as opposed to is an equivalent the representation of the exact string .com or .biz?
And if I can just sneak a question in from the side here, how is this specifically an IDN issue? Notions of equivalence can also be there can be a translated version of an established string that's represented also just using ASCII.
Exactly, Carrie. Thank you.
Can I comment on that, Ron?
Sure.
Well, this takes us back, I think, to that confusingly similar description of what we're trying to get. If we're going to say a string is, exact, copy of the ASCII versus confusingly similar or versus equivalent, then I think what we're struggling is the word equivalent or the words, as it say, equivalent or confusingly similar. Maybe we could just clarify, by saying exactly Mohan.com, the IDN equivalent of Mohan.com. with COM versus assuming that there is another equivalent of what COM means. So it will get us, we have to be really specific, and I don't know, there may be a thousand ways of being specific, but...
But if I might, Ram, I think we have, to Carrie's point, I think we are talking about a rule. Let me call it a framework, Carrie. I think we're talking about a framework in the other work that's going on that we're just now trying to test in the IDN world, are we not? So to Carrie's question of why is this different from an ASCII translation?
So this is Ram. I guess I have two responses and also a little bit of a comment on Sophia's. And I've been thinking about how to simplify the description because even if you asked me to repeat what I just said, I think I would have a problem. So perhaps a simpler way to represent this is the following. Priority rights for new strings do not derive from existing strings, but could derive from IPR or other rights.
Right.
Is that not the real principle that we are trying to say we agree on?
Right.
That priority rights for new strings, whether they be, and we really don't care whether it's at a registrant level or a registry level.
I could not applaud that more. And that we are talking about a situation that is not anchored in the discussion of IDN. IDN is just the mode of expressing a string. Anything that vaguely resembles a discussion of who has rights to what is more fundamental than that.
Yeah, and Ram, I will just offer a friendly amendment to what you just said. IPR or other rights. Present string holders do not have IPR rights in that string. They might have some other form of established identity and relationship to a string, but it is not necessarily an IPR right.
So perhaps then the statement that we should make is priority rights for new strings do not derive from existing strings, but could derive from other rights.
Oh, that's a bit
Yes, it's Will. Other rights such as IPR rights, perhaps.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree entirely with everything pretty much everyone's saying.
So the statement that I have here is priority rights for new strings do not derive from existing strings.
Period.
But could derive from other rights such as IPR rights.
Ram, this is your officer. Can anyone give an example when you're saying IPR rights? Are you saying trademark? What are you saying? What are the other things that covers?
Okay, so it's Marilyn. Let me give you an example. It is entirely possible and practical to envision that a sponsoring community, which is today sponsoring a string that happens to be in the ASCII string, has determined, they came together, it's a global community, it involves a large number of non-English speaking parties. We have talked about in the PDP05 about whether there is a unique relationship for the sponsoring community. So that's one question to ask ourselves.
This is Aubrey. Can I get in the queue?
I'm sorry, who is that?
This is Aubrey. Can I get in the queue?
Absolutely. You're the only one in the queue, so you have the floor.
Oh, cool. I would recommend that we kind of avoid all of the complexities about trademark, intellectual property, whatever, you know, that encompasses, and all the other things, and take your first declarative statement that says, you know, I mean, you said it better than I'm going to quote you now, that, you know, no rights are derived from having a string in another, you know, from having a string, period, and that you not go into the clause of other places where rights may be you know, entailed or gotten, because that's covered in many other places. What you're really trying to say is, like in other strings, IDN strings do not, no rights are derived from having another string, period.
So let me ask a question. If you look at the GAC principles and if you look at the principles on PDP-05, you see the requirement, and remember that PDP-05 does apply to IDNs, you see the requirement to, I'm not reading from it, but it's something like avoid, gosh, I may have to look it up, but it's something, the GAC principle is about reducing confusion and the need for duplicate and defensive registration. So if we put a period where Aubrey wants to put a period, Aubrey, where do you, my view is IDNs are going to have a sunrise or protecting the rights of others phase as well as non-IDNs.
Yeah.
Where do you see putting that in relation to the phrase that you just proposed?
Basically, I think that falls.
Marilyn, I will place that as a question, but I also want to ask if there are any others who would like to comment on Avery's proposal before we, you know, we get back to a redirect.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Will. I mean, I think I'm saying basically what the folks are getting at here, but it's, you know, looking at this. Marilyn seems to be saying that, well, I know I'm saying that, while I'm certainly sympathetic to what Avery is saying, to anyone but a lawyer, and even then only some, stopping at do not derive from rights to other strings, period, to me comes dangerously close to saying we don't recognize trademark, and, you know, de facto we do. Whether or not, you know, people say you don't have a right in this string because of your trademark directly, to me may be splitting hairs. And what I'm saying is, if people, you know, have rights to a top-level domain essentially through their trademark, just saying, you know, rights to a second string do not derive from the first comes very close to almost saying they're, you know, the trademark issue is not there. It's one way it could be read.
Thank you, Will. Any other comments?
Well, yeah, this is Yoav. I'm not a lawyer, but I want to disagree with you, because saying that if you own one string, it doesn't automatically means that you have rights for the other.
That's right.
Saying that phrase, period, doesn't say that you don't have, this is only logic, okay?
It doesn't say
that you don't have other rights that might provide you for that string. So this
I agree,
is, you know,
I agree, but what I'm saying is I think it's unnecessarily provocative. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. And by saying IPR, I don't think that we are giving too much to IP. I mean, it is the reality. So,
I disagree on that, because it really depends on which level.
Yoav?
I think at, yeah.
Sorry, I before you comment, I think I had somebody who, I think Aubrey wanted to redirect.
Sorry.
So can you put Gary in the queue too, please, Rob?
So put me in the queue later. Okay.
Okay, got it. So I have Aubrey, then Yoav, then Gary.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't trying to, at least not in this case, take anything away from trademark rights. What I'm basically saying is, in within all the other processes we've got, whether it's the Protecting Rights of Others Working Group or the Reserved Names Working Group or the O5 itself, that stuff is being covered. This group, as I understood it, was about IDNs and things that were specific to the IDN case. So if we try to cover all the other implications of, you know, not because of this, yes, because of that, not because of the other thing, then I think we complicate our work and we may come in conflict with the people like the PRO group who are focusing on, you know, what are the trademark rights that one gets based on, you know, different rules in different parts of the world when compared to the commons, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not trying to take away from the right of mark holders in this case. I'm just trying to say it's not relevant to this group's statement.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in agreement. It's just a matter of tone. And, you know, personally, I don't feel like this is a life and death matter, but I'm just, to me, this is more a question of politics than a substance. I think you're intellectually, you're absolutely right, but I just don't want to send the wrong signal. In other words, whose gore do you appear to be, whose ox do you appear to be goring when you say one or the other? And that, I'll certainly, you know, defer to the better judgments of others if people have, you know, really clear arguments one way or the other. But
because if we put in the IPR rights, then I have to start arguing for the rights of the public and the commons.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying
to. It continues to grow.
In fact, I'm trying to be kind of paradoxically, I'm trying not to get into the IPR.
Yeah.
You know, but whatever.
Thank you. You off?
Well, yeah. In general, what I want to say is that I agree with this general idea, and I don't think that I think in some level there was some mixture between the top level and the second level, and I think that the cases of second level are usually solved by a sunrise period, and we've seen it in other TLDs, and I think in general for IDN this is the same way we should follow. I think that the discussion that we in this group should cover is the discussion about the TLD and whether there are rights or there aren't rights for existing TLDs for other versions and or variants or any other way you can say that of that TLD in other languages. I think this is the main issue that we need to cover and discuss whether we agree or not. My opinion is no, it's not having a right for an existing ASCII TLD doesn't say that you automatically have a right for a variant or a variation of that in an IDN, and it doesn't say that you won't get it on other rights. This is clear.
Yoav, I just wanted to just distinguish one thing from what you were saying. I think when you meant variant, you did not mean it in the IDN sense of a variant. You just meant it as an alternative rather than as a variant.
Yeah, it could be either, you know, the equivalent, okay, you can use the equivalent word for .com or .biz or .info.org, doesn't matter, in Chinese, or the transliteration, or, you know, any other thing. Now, it's probably, if you take a string, this short ASCII three letters or four letter string in ASCII or in English, and try to translate it, maybe even to transliterate it to another language, you'll get a few variants, a few variations of that of that string, and a few equivalents of that string. And so what does it mean? So it means that if you have, if a registry right now has that TLD, it can be a GTLD or a CCTLD, okay? Does it mean that it automatically have the right for all the variations, all the equivalents that you could think of? How can you cover all the equivalents? So I think even on the practical side, we must go to a route where we say, no, it's not automatic, okay? And it's not, it doesn't say if you have this right, you have that right. But from now we need to say, okay, if we do think that there are some places that there are rights, we need to say where, okay? And that's the way I think we should go.
Got it. Thank you very much. Kerry.
There seems to be something that every single one of us is saying, and that is a claim on a second string does not derive in and of itself from a claim to a first string. So whatever it was, I'll instantiate this with my own case, .museum, whatever it was that the sponsoring organization for .museum was able to put forward as justification for being given that museum can also be put forward as justification for some other language correlate to it. And I would think if I were an independent who wanted some correlate to that museum, I wouldn't be saying, we want our language version of that museum. They'd be saying, what we want is utterly independent of that museum, and we don't wish to generate any discussion about our being our riding on anybody else's coattails. So every time we say variant of an existing domain or equivalent to an existing domain, we're arguing against any case that might be made for independent delegation of that thing. And yeah, sure, it's entirely possible that VeriSign can be constrained from acquiring some other .com, but I would like to see anybody succeed getting their .com with VeriSign's opposition to it. I mean, this isn't an IDN situation that we're talking about. We've been on the phone for an hour now, agreeing that we're talking about something that's really not an IDN concern and we should be talking about IDN concerns. We don't need to justify noting that this is more the concern of some other group beyond simply stating that. We don't have to go into the intricacies of how we would word our statement. Just simply say that there are concerns here that are being considered by other working groups. They are not inherently IDN issues. These are the IDN issues that we've been focusing on. So maybe we can start focusing on IDN issues.
Ron, it's Marilyn. Can I be in the queue?
And you have the floor.
I think Terry's right, and you know, perhaps part of this is because some of us have been in PBP05 for some time and know the details that he's gone through in trying to lay out what I would call a challenge process in relation to confusingly similar strings at the top level. Practicality dictates that whether we individually support this idea or not, we do have to be pragmatic and practical about what we can achieve. And if someone has some kind of other identity or right in a name or a confusingly similar version of that name, we felt in the PBP 05 that there should be a challenge process. That name would end up on reserve and wouldn't get allocated to anyone. I do agree fully with Terry that this is not an IDN-specific issue. And maybe we could find a way to document the questions and then see if there are any IDN-specific issues not addressed in the in the broader proposed approach in PBP 05.
Thank you, Marilyn. I think that's a productive statement to certainly make. What I have here so is a statement that I had made, which with the IPR rights component is what sparked further discussion. I agree that while it's not inherently an IDN issue, those who work in this area expect that the IDN working group will have a statement on this or will have covered it, which is what we will do. One of the things I wanted to also mention was in last week's call, there was what I would consider a proposal or at least a discussion on this topic. And I wanted to bring this up now to this week's call because there is something that is germane. I will read from my notes from last week. It says, sponsored communities may perhaps be treated differently than a unsponsored community for a GTLD string. If the sponsored operator has global buy-in, it might be a different situation. And then there were two kind of sub-points suggested there, which is, should sponsored TLDs be treated differently, and should registrants be treated differently based on the steps taken to protect a name and languages? Now, the second question is not germane for this topic at this point, but the question that did come up last week was, should sponsored names be treated differently because of the prior stated reason that a sponsored community has or at least says they have global buy-in. I'll also call your attention to the statement that has been read into the record earlier from the Dot Travel Registry on this topic.
It's Marilyn, and I will just, I think I spoke already on this topic in support of such a statement. There's a demonstration of global support, and we have required the sponsored community, in order to get the sponsored category, to show global support. I think we have to respect that.
This is William. I'd like to be placed in the queue.
Okay, William.
Yeah, this is your Bob, also want to be in the queue.
Bob in the queue. Anyone else who wants to be in the queue?
Yeah, Ron.
Sophia? Okay, William.
Yep. I think I'm in support of the your statement that no priority rights in a new string can be derived from an existing string. And I think that in itself already, and what Kerry said is very true, I believe. So a sponsored community who wants a new IDN TLD does not need to base the application on rights to an existing ASCII TLD. It already has support. So I don't know why do we need to... That to me, it's very clear that sponsored community is indeed different from GTLDs.
So if I was to paraphrase what you're saying, William, you're saying, given the very definition of sponsored TLDs, any such set aside written in our document is redundant.
Yeah, so given the definition of the sponsored TLD plus the statement that you just made that sparked all these discussions,
uh-huh,
if that is ratified, plus the definition of the sponsored TLD means that sponsored communities do have different rights from the GTLDs. That's just what I'm saying.
Thank you, William. You are.
Yes, I want to say that I don't have a firm opinion in this case, and I want to raise a few questions and probably hear some answers, and it would be interesting to hear Kerry's answer because he's coming from a sponsored TLD. I'll raise two issues. I think that I have less problem than in saying maybe Dot Museum have some rights in other IDNs, which again I'm not sure if I agree with this thing, then for the organization that is bidding, that is currently in process for the .xxx TLD. My personal feeling is that there is some difference. Okay, is that can you take these cases as similar? I'm not sure. And the other thing is, if I go back for Dot Museum, and it would be very interesting, Kerry, to hear what you think about it, because I'm not too familiar with all the rules for Dot Museum to provide Dot Museum names. But let's say, for example, let's take India, for example, or China. I believe I just have the feeling, I really don't know, and maybe you can correct me, that it might be very possible, really possible, that in India there are certain organizations that are called locally by the or local government, or maybe the Indian government, it could be the same in China, and as museums, and they might not be a part and be eligible to get a Dot Museum ASCII domain name. Now, are we saying that if we, let's say, tomorrow provide Dot Museum, the current body that manages the Dot Museum top-level domain, the rights for the Indian language Dot Museum, so then the eligibility will be the same eligibility for the Dot Museum. Well, actually, locally, what it means that there are many, many possible bodies that are called as museums, but won't be able to get the Indian equivalent. So is that something that could happen?
Can I respond to that directly?
Yeah.
Sure. The Dot Museum policy is set by the International Council of Museums, which is an aggregate of something like 150 national committees. There's an
Okay.
Indian national committee, there's an Israeli national committee, there's a Japanese Yeah. national committee, you name it. Any country that is likely to, any language that is likely to appear in the discussion of IDN is used by some national committee in ICOM. There may be one or two exceptions. And it seems to me very, very unlikely that any one of the national committees will decide that the organization that it is a part of is somehow acting counter to the interests of that committee.
Okay.
So I, there may be an example that you could find that would support some what you're getting at, but I, the museum case is probably a poor one.
Okay, yeah, this is, I know. This is, I specifically spoke about it. I think I thought that in the case of that museum, it will be this will be the case. But what do you say about if you take the equivalent of .xxx and .museum, which are both sponsored TLDs, which is, you know, this is two very different cases.
But I'll point out that .xxx is not really a TLD as of yet. So
right now, yeah, but let's say it gets there. Okay, you know, it's on the process. ICANN is trying again to.
But may I request that you go, that you actually use, if you're going to use an existing TLD, then...
Okay, so take dot jobs, okay?
Thank you.
Take dot jobs, very easy.
That was a question, redirect to Kerry.
Yeah.
Once again, what am I supposed to comment on here?
I'm asking. I think that there's a difference. If you take let's say dot jobs right now, okay?
Yep.
I think that there's a difference. Dot jobs is, I think it's sponsored by a company called Employee Media, and it's I think that the case of dot jobs, for example, might be very different from the case of dot museum.
Yeah. Well, the argument has to be that. I mean, Dot Travel and Dot Museum, I believe, are unique in the label, the vocabulary of TLD labels, in being actual dictionary words. Oh, jobs is too. Okay. So to the extent that you have a dictionary word, there is an immediate lexemic correspondence. Museum said in some other language is still the exact same thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So in that case, what you would be arguing is the extent of representativity of the sponsoring organization. Now, I'm not quite sure what ICANN expected during the second round of STLD applications, but the first time out, we needed to demonstrate that we, not just that we were representative of our community, but that we were globally representative of our community. So to the extent that that requirement was imposed upon the so-called STLD round sponsors, then that's not a valid argument either. What I would do if I were looking for an IDN label that was somehow vaguely derived from a pre-existing label would be to argue just absolutely no such association whatsoever. To the extent that this is a new organization wishing to enter the market with a brand new label, and if anybody thinks that this label was inspired by a pre-existing label, they're simply wrong. That would be the way to do it. But again, if there is a label that is a dictionary word that's been associated with a sponsoring organization on the basis of its global representativity, I have a rough time imagining how that could be somehow transcended.
Yeah. So, would you agree for generally saying that we cannot say in general that there is some rights for sponsored TLDs, but we need kind of go on a case by case, because just saying generally sponsored TLDs would cover some cases maybe that should be different, should be treated differently than the specifically like the dot museum case.
Well, again, it's, what is it that somebody is requesting? I, as the president and CEO of the Dot Museum sponsor, would be quite happy if some entity using a language and script that we don't understand in Europe were to come forward and say, we would like to operate a version of Dot Museum, and of course we will adhere to the policies that have been established for the initial Dot Museum, this is an attempt to extend the value of this,
okay,
then we would probably be delighted by that. If
okay.
someone came and said that you are not globally representative, you don't, certainly don't represent the community in our country, we want our own label, our own Dot Museum label, I just don't see how that could possibly work. If it were to be able to work, then ICANN would admit that there was some basic flaw in the 2000 round that Dot Museum was created in, and they would also need somehow to override the authority of an NGO that was created 60 years ago specifically to be representative of the museum community globally.
Okay. Well, I agree with your view. I think this is the way to go. Okay.
Joao, would you just for the help of the document, etc., would you mind taking a minute and just summarizing your what you're agreeing with?
Okay. Well, I think, if I understand right, that what Kerry said right now is that he doesn't mind, just Kerry, correct me if I'm wrong, that in case of an IDN, if a body, some kind of an organization, comes and asks for an equivalent of Dot Museum in another language, and they will come and agree with the same eligibility or rules of the current Dot Museum, that specific organization will be able to manage the IDN TLD. Is that what you were trying to say, Kerry?
Not quite. What I'm saying is that that suggestion would be something that we would certainly be interested in discussing.
Okay.
We don't award TLD labels. And if somebody were to say, we want to set up an Azerbaijani museum, the Azerbaijani word for museum, but it's not going to be based at all on the policies that apply to the ASCII Dot Museum, with the very specific consequence that eligibility in the one does not imply eligibility in the other, then
okay.
the value of the global STLD has just been destroyed. If somebody says that we wish to reinforce the value of a pre-existing label, that's very much in the interest of our community. Again,
okay.
it's what benefits museums, not what benefits the domain name industry, sorry to say that, has to be our overriding concern.
Sure. So what you're saying, actually, which I think that I agree for, is that you don't think that the current Dot Museum registry should get what I've said before, automatically the Dot Museum equivalent in Azerbaijan. If there is someone asking for a Dot Museum in Azerbaijan, it should be in some way reinforcing the current Dot Museum top level domain.
Let's put it this way. If there are 350 languages that are likely to figure in the IDN space, I would love to see museum in every single one of them. And I can envision numerous business models that would make that happen. And I would be delighted to see this thing move forward. This is not, this doesn't say anything more than the notion of a whole bunch of museums is very appealing to me. And I'm quite sure that any operator of any TLD would kind of like that, unless the essential thing is the singularity of that label, in which case the suggestion of having a translated variant of it would be something that would have to be opposed. So there's just so many different things that can happen. And I'm sort of assuming that the application for an IDN label for a new TLD has the greatest chance of success if it brings something absolutely new to the marketplace.
Yeah, sure.
This notion of wishing to derive secondary value from something that somebody else has branded by using another script is probably a weaker case.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear you
all? It's Marilyn.
Yep.
Can I ask Kerry a question when you get around to it?
Sure. I'll put you in the list here. Is it directly about what's been discussed here, Marilyn?
It is.
Then why don't you you ask your question?
Okay. I heard Kerry saying, expressing his point of view as the manager of Dot Museum, but I want to be sure that I understood, Kerry. you were not proposing to speak for the other sponsored parties. You were giving your individual opinion. Was that
individual
wrong?
Cannot be overemphasized here. I mean, I've been following this process as astutely as anybody else has, to the limit of my ability to be astute. And this is what I personally think would be a reasonable development in the very specific case of TLDs that benefit the museum, the professional museum community. I don't suggest that this is extensible one jot into any other TLD.
And I would suspect, Kerry, that whatever our statements are, you will take it into sponsored TLDs and ask them for their perspectives and bring that back as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Marilyn, was that the extent of your question?
It was.
Thank you. Sophia, you're next.
Yeah, I guess what I want to say after listening to perhaps Yoav and Kerry is finally there came to an agreement, maybe, I'm not sure, that the sponsored communities, the statement started by saying sponsored communities can be treated differently in GTLD. That's what we were deliberating. And then...
In IDN strings, you mean?
In IDN strings. And then... I think the treated differently was the word that we were all struggling with. What does that mean, right? And so, Kerry, I think you were trying to say that the Dot Museum, because it's an established, it sort of have more weight because it comes with the established community and it's recognized at the dictionary level and so forth and so forth. So therefore, you're not saying that the IDN issued under Dot Museum in a different language adhere to the principles of the sponsored community as it's set out at the the ASCII GTLDs. My understanding is what you're saying is anybody can have Dot Museum in their languages as long as the principles are adhered to within the sponsored communities, principles which is recognized by a higher established institution or community. That's what you were saying, right? Because anybody can have the Dot Museum in their languages.
But we don't award TLD labels to anybody. I can't say that anybody can have Dot Museum in their language. I'm saying that if some language community were to express an interest in a Dot Museum label in that language and was proposing it to be operated on the exact same policy basis as the current Dot Museum, that I would think that suggestion would have clear interest and merit.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I agree with that principle, period. But the question we went is to go back to the first statement we made is sponsored communities can be treated differently. I'm trying to merge what was discussed with that statement, if that is what we're going to use. What does that mean, treated differently in IDNs? How were they treated now that we're going to treat them differently with an IDN? That's my problem. Is the sponsored community right now within the ASCII community, you know, they have a generic principles? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what that statement means as it relates to what we just discussed. How would we, you know, if we're making a policy over this, how are we writing the policy? So that's a clarification question I would ask after this discussion, because we started out with this statement saying sponsored communities can be treated differently in IDN. What does that mean as we... because I think... is everybody there?
Yes, absolutely.
I think what you all said earlier was the sunrise period, the case by case to be treated differently. I think that sort of... I would agree with that too, in a sense, if we're saying that the current process of sponsored communities were treated, you know, with a case-by-case basis where they didn't have, in the ASCII world, where they did not have
an established principles like the Dart Museum, and when somebody goes and asks Dart Jobs or any other TLD in a different language, they don't have to go back to the, you know, I suppose the sunrise, within the IDN world, the sunrise period would take care of it because there's no structure already made for sponsored communities right now in the ASCII world, except maybe the Dart Museum has its own because it's a very well-established community. So I'm just a little confused how we set policy on this. What would be the statement of policy? That's just my question.
Thank you, Sophia. Why don't I ask that directly, you know, redirect back that into the working group here and ask if you have any comments or discussions on Sophia's question. And Sophia, perhaps you could just repeat the question.
My question is that we started out by saying sponsored communities can be treated differently in the IDN world. And so we established that they will be treated according to the Dart Museum principles, which is already established one. We're saying, yes, it's, you know, anybody can come and ask, have an IDN TLD for already established community, which is the sponsored community. However, when we're going to a non-established group like the Dart Jobs that didn't have the that has a smaller community support versus the grander one, and so we're saying IDN TLDs should be treated on a case-by-case basis, or they should be treated differently. So, I mean, I have two scenarios here with case-by-case treated differently for sponsored TLDs like Jobs, and then we have the Dart Museums, which if everybody applied for a Dart Museum in a different language, then what we're saying is if they adhere to the principles of the existing Dart Museum sponsored communities, then it's an acceptable principle. So what is the policy statement that will resolve this particular issue? Or are we all in agreement that sponsored communities in the IDN, in IDN, can be treated differently, but what that treatment is, I don't know if we've crystallized it to a point of, is it case-by-case basis for IDN, or can we just say that? Or are we graduating it to a higher community like the Dart Museum? So.
Understood. Thank you. Any comments or discussion on this?
This is William. I'd like to just put a comment.
Okay. Anyone else? All right, William, you have the floor.
I'd just like to revise my my earlier statement, which was I said that sponsored communities are inherently different. What I really mean is that given that someone has, Yoav and you guys have come up with the Dart Jobs example, that is clearly not something that's similar, that's clearly different from the museum case. And so what I really mean is I don't think we should have to say that sponsored communities should be treated differently. I think we should just defer that to the sponsored TLD group. In the IDN, so when you take a sponsored TLD case, an application for an IDN sponsored TLD, that should just be no different than someone applying for a sponsored TLD that is ASCII. And yes, that's it.
Thank you. I guess one of the thoughts that strikes me as we get towards the close of this discussion is that, you know, in earlier discussions we have spoken about the concept of what I will call generically bundling of TLD labels. So in the case of sponsored TLDs, such a concept probably works quite well. So I'll just leave it there, and let's move to the next topic. The next topic here, or at least the next question that had been posed earlier, was should registrants be treated differently based on steps taken to protect the name in different languages? And I think, if I remember right, Marilyn, you had stated something to this effect in our call last week.
I did. You're right.
Would you care to elaborate?
Yeah, I asked the question of whether, and I'm thinking primarily about probably a Sunrise process, but I think the example I used was a famous and well-known brand holder who may have registered a trademark and protects that trademark in 120 countries. Let's just pick that as a number. And someone like MK.net, who did register a domain name and occasionally uses it or does use it or whatever, but hasn't even bothered to trademark it in a single country. And, you know, I think trying to understand the expectations of I think we need to be thinking about what the Sunrise or protecting the rights of others approach is going to look like in IDNs. There are, I understand, a number of IDNs at the second level that have already been, IDN UDRPs at the second level that have already been done by WIPO and perhaps by others, but I'm aware of the number that have been done by WIPO. And I think we might want to hear from them and see what lessons can be learned from what they've relied on in making the determinations to date at the second level.
Thank you.
This is Mike Rodenbaugh. Just a comment on that. It sounds like that's more appropriate for the working group dealing with protection of rights of others. Am I missing the point?
Mike, are you asking me?
Sure, you or anyone in the group.
Sure. So I'll make a comment on that. I think we have to be very careful to be sure that we maintain the involvement of the expertise of the IDN working group. I'm not proposing necessarily where the work be done, but I am making a recommendation that just because people are in another working group does not mean that they necessarily have all the expertise necessary. So I'd like to be sure that there's strong reflection, just as we earlier talked about having strong involvement of the IDN working group on geopolitical names and country codes, et cetera, that we make sure there's strong reflection of the IDN working group expertise in any such consideration.
Okay, I guess I think I understand what you're saying, Marilyn, but I mean, ultimately, the issue is one of whether IDNs are confusingly similar to existing ASCII domains, correct? And that's not an IDN issue. Obviously, it's both. It's an IDN and an ASCII issue.
Right.
Okay. I guess my point is we just want to be careful not to duplicate work. And I think I volunteered or was volunteered to be liaison between those two working groups.
I think that's what I was... Can I jump in then, Ram? I think...
Sure, jump in.
Yeah, Sophia. I think this probably is a good time to bring up the issue I was raising at the end, that I was hoping we will raise at the end the role definition. And I think Mike brought it up. If somebody is working on a particular group in the reserve name group or any other one dealing with particular issues, then there are liaisons established for that. Bringing the whole issue up to a working group level is not only repetitive, it defeats the purpose of what the liaisons are supposed to be working on. So for me, I needed clarification on that role. Otherwise, I thought then the working group of IDN should be previewed to every report and every issue or working group that we're all working on, so that they could make their comments. Otherwise,
you know, that's when I mentioned we need to streamline the whole process. If we're creating all these liaisons, let them be assigned to do what they need to do and present to the group. Or
understood. Sophia, let me speak very briefly and hopefully crisply on this topic. My view of a liaison is pretty clear in the sense that the liaison is my expectation is that the liaison provide a summary of what the working group that they are a part of, what input that working group may have, to provide that input into the working group they are a liaison to, on the one side. On the other side, where in their judgment, the working group they are a liaison to is discussing topics that are directly relevant to the original working group to bring those topics back. I do not think the liaison's job is to pass every email or every document that is being discussed. However, where the liaison does believe in their judgment that there is an overlap or there is an area of interest, it is, in my opinion, their responsibility to point that out. The experts are invited onto the other working groups because of their specific knowledge or expertise, so to speak, and they may or may not actually attend all the calls or may not provide or attend all the discussions in the other working group they are in, while the liaison is expected to pay attention to the discussions in the working group they are liaison to, as well as be on the calls. So the liaison's role is kind of more it's a two-way bi-directional communication role and summarization and communication role, while an expert's role in general is unidirectional into the other working group they're an expert on.
Okay. That makes sense to me, Ram. Again, Mike Rodenboss. I would just suggest that these issues about confusing similarity and how we deal with that between ASCII and non-ASCII strings is better left to the group protecting the rights of others.
It's Marilyn. I'm just going to make a final comment about this. When we say better left to another group, I think we need to be, I just want to support what Ram was saying, that there are going to be times because of the speed of the work that needs to be done where it's more expedient to draw in a joint discussion involving experts that are in the IDN group than spend a lot of time to-ing and fro-ing with liaison statements.
This is Aubrey. Can I say something?
Sure, Aubrey.
Hi. Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a sort of continuum, a space between the formality of liaison statements and the having experts cross-pollinate the groups. I think having a liaison is good as sort of a continuous process of keeping track what's going on, of alerting the two groups to what's going on, of knowing when an expert is required in the other. I think we have to use the expert whenever it's necessary, and I think we should avoid, you know, the formality of liaisons. Certainly if we have something written that would be useful to have our liaison take over to the other group and say, hey, you know, they've written this, they think it might be useful, let's talk about it. But I think there's sort of a rational middle here where we can use liaisons quickly and usefully without a whole lot of structure and process.
I guess, Aubrey, it's Mike Rodenbaugh again, just to respond to that, I completely agree with what you're saying. I'm solely trying to avoid this group getting hung up on issues that are going to be dealt with in another group, particularly when that other group is more focused specifically on this issue. You know, right? I mean, the protecting the rights of others group is all about dealing with confusion amongst users, whereas the IDN group, I don't think necessarily needs to go down that road.
Except for when the confusions are specifically IDN-ish.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm actually hearing from Mike is even if the confusions are specifically in the area of IDN, that the IDN working group would provide input to the PRO working group rather than take it on itself.
Ram, this is your, I would like to comment on that. I disagree with Mike. I think that I've heard about three or four times during this call, each time from someone else, that we raised an issue and saying that, oh, this issue is not, we should not deal it with it in this group. I think that we should deal with all issues under that are relevant to IDN. We should use liaisons to other groups that can provide input. We should provide our input to other groups regarding IDN. But if we are, if we want to provide a real good advice regarding what should be done for IDN policy, we should talk about confusingly similar. This is one of the issues. This is a very important issue in IDN, and we cannot leave it to other groups. I really think it would be wrong. And
we have to talk about unconfusingly distinct.
Yoav, I understand what you're saying. It's a concern to everybody. I completely understand what you're saying. It is also a concern, however, outside of the IDN context. It's just a concern that's exacerbated by IDNs.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I'm, again, only trying to avoid having two groups consider a very substantial, complicated issue and potentially come to differing conclusions.
The solution for that will be to have a liaison to get input from what that group is talking, what are their general views, and see whether we think that these views are similar and are right, you know, on the IDN world. And that will be. So we won't do, let's say, we won't go through the same process and spend all the time that they spend on the same issue. I agree with that shouldn't happen. But I don't think that we should just say, look, this is not our issue and not discuss it at all. We need maybe to be very careful. That will be the work of the chair and to make sure that we are not, you know, spending too much time on issues that are done, you know, are covered by other groups, but maybe to try and get some input from those groups to our issues.
Ron, it's Marilyn. I think that there's actually a much simpler approach to this than maybe we're making it, and I think it's kind of what we're using in the reserve name group, where we're sort of, instead of just relying on liaison, we're actually inviting some collaboration. Isn't that perhaps just the easiest thing to leave open as an option to say on a particular topic it may be appropriate to have a collaborative meeting, working session between the two groups?
Marilyn, I think that's also a third proposal to what we're talking about. Now that opens up a whole group-to-group meeting versus the, you know, what we're currently talking about the role of a liaison, what should they be doing, and then the duplication of work, which I think Mike is stressing. And I think all is valid, but for example, let me just mention when the email came today, the geopolitical group, I said I was sitting in LA, Ram was there, Tina was there, and I felt like, okay, they are there as an expert observer, and I appreciate that, and their input is needed at all times, and they could be used. But as a liaison, when I come back, if I had to report on the major issues of all what's relevant to the IDN, it will be my role. That is what I thought it would be. And then I'll be reporting to the group on all the issues that would touch upon IDN and then get the view of our group and then work with the chair to get the consensus and report the issues. And then if there's another reserve for the next meeting of the reserve working group, then we will provide what IDN working group has said. So we're not missing any topics, but at least we're not duplicating, work, and we're not, you know, putting people, you know, into unnecessary. We get all the consensus during our own sessions. We don't need to create a third session to
to get people to talk about the, you know, the similar things that, you know, in, that's being addressed in both groups. So I'm just trying to sort out, I've never been a liaison, and I don't know the work of the liaison, but if it is not that, it should be that. This is just my opinion.
It's Mike Rodenbaugh again. You know, again, Sophia, I believe I agree with everything you've said. I think on this specific issue, just to bring it back in context, you know, I think that the issue that we've been talking about bundling or aliasing or DNAME records or however you want to look at it, is certainly something we need to continue talking about in this group as the top level. I think it's also a consideration if people want to consider and talk about how that might work at the second level. That would be good information to feed back into the PRO working group, because clearly a PRO working group is going to be dealing with second level issues, regardless of what this group does.
Ron, can I ask you to take up the question of clarification of the role and work of liaisons with Bruce, and maybe come back to us in writing so we don't, because I think just debating this is putting us all in a big circle and everybody's trying to do their best and lend support, but it might just be, would you mind doing that on our behalf, and then we can come back to it and see what the suggestion is in after your consultation with Bruce?
I'm happy to do that. Thank you. I guess back to the question of, I mean, Mike, you have a concrete proposal in front of us. Suggested an, a differing perspective. Your proposal was that, you know, when it comes to should registrants be treated differently based on steps taken to protect name in other languages, your suggestion was that in this case, if in our report, for instance, our report would say that this question was asked and the working group suggests that this question is best discussed in the PRO working group with a specific focus on languages and IDN or something to that effect. And I heard Yoav say, no, we should discuss it here and then provide whatever input we have when it comes to languages and IDNs into the PRO working group.
I think, and then I just last said that I think I agree with Yoav that, yes, if you want to consider that and get the inputs into the PRO, that is a good idea. I would just urge the group to not get too carried away with discussing lots of other issues relating to confusing similarity, right? Specifically the trademark issues. So.
Understood.
Okay.
So, so let me open up this topic for just a couple of minutes, because we've spent more time discussing whether we should discuss it rather than discussing it, so let's actually discuss it if you want to. Should registrants be treated differently based on steps taken to protect a name in other languages or scripts? It's a question on, you know, for discussion now.
This is Aubrey. Can someone explain better to me what it means to take a step to protect? In other words, are we suggesting that prohibitions, that there would be reserved names, that there would be, that this is just something one would pay attention to during the contention part and the challenge part of a process. I'm not sure what steps some people are suggesting we take.
Right, and are we talking just about the top level or the second level or both?
Well, since the working our working group is focused on the top level, And we're also talking in this agenda today, we're talking about registrants who, by definition, therefore, will be at the next level or levels lower than that. The answer really is it's IDN TLDs and registrants in those IDN TLDs, Mike.
Okay. To me, the issue is, again, just no different than it already exists in ASCII TLDs. So
would you propose a sunrise process, Mike?
I think, again, those issues are being resolved by the PRO group as to what will happen with sunrises or not sunrises or post-launch takedown mechanisms, modifications to the UDRP, all of those things are potentially on the table in that group.
So, Mike, would I be right in saying that what you're proposing to us as a working group is that the rights of registrants or the rights of others, deferring treatment based on IDNs or languages, what are you suggesting there? You're suggesting that it not be studied in this working group and it be studied in the PRO working group.
Can I ask the question differently?
Sure, please.
And maybe it's not the same question, but I guess what I'm looking to understand is, and maybe this would be an answer to Mike, is what is specifically different about the situation in IDNs than in the normal case? Mike has sort of said that as far as he can tell, it's the same case, and therefore there's nothing for us to talk about that's specific to the IDN group.
That's well worded, Avery, and I was getting to the same thing. Perhaps the question, is there a difference?
Well, what is the difference? Assuming there is, because people have said there is, what is it?
Right. I'm open. My ears are open. I'll just say that the UDRP currently already addresses both IDNs and non-ASCII IDNs in precisely the same manner.
Rob, can I make a comment?
Sure, Carrie.
It's generally true about IDN. It's been noted and stated again in any number of regards that IDN doesn't introduce new problems into the discussion. It just makes existing problems worse, in many cases, unimaginably worse. But other than the issues that specifically relate to Unicode in the computing environment, IDN is just the same old stuff.
So, Perry, you're saying that no difference, in your opinion. There is no difference.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that if there's this category, IDN makes existing problems worse, that perhaps what we should focus on is taking inventory of that worse stuff and calling attention to situations where it is really a lot worse. So if there are people on this call who are familiar with problems that we are addressing as they manifest themselves in the non-IDN context and feel that there's no fundamental difference, if we can't determine any fundamental difference, perhaps we should just relinquish the issue.
I think it's an excellent idea to look at it a little bit further. For example, you could look at all the UDRP cases that have involved IDNs, and we could take a subset of non-IDN UDRP cases or just go on the knowledge of people who deal with those every day and come up with any differences.
So, Mike, I was suggesting we might actually hear from the WIPO staff. Is that similar to what you're proposing, or were you thinking that someone might do just a drafting analysis exercise?
Well, if WIPO staff would do it for us, that would be best in my book.
If they would agree to be on a call with us?
If they'd agree to look at the IDN cases specifically and let us know if they've seen any peculiarities or differences in the way those cases are presented or decided.
I doubt if they have time to do that in our time frame, but they might be able to be on a call with us.
Carrie, this is Yoav here. I want to ask you, you said that in some cases it makes it extremely worse. Could you give an example for what you think? Where would it make it extremely...
Well, I actually hate to do this because I've heard all of the talk about confusing similarities. I really would care to hear, but I'm confusing similarity. If we're dealing with the 26 letters and 10 digits in the ASCII frame of reference, there's confusability between zeros and O's and between I's and L's, but that's it, two or three cases. And for every new script that we add, this just becomes a larger problem, and the similarities between two different scripts larger still. And the really scary stuff is all of the scripts that nobody's really talking about that we're not capable of recognizing the dangers in, but nonetheless we need to make policies that are embraces of them. One example.
Yeah, but isn't it, I think that I just in my thought that if although I understand where you're coming from, but I think it's kind of something that relates to the same script. It's very easy for me to think about the Hebrew script, or I don't know, a Chinese script is very different from the English one. And I would think that if someone has, as much as I know, if someone has a trademark, let's say in Israel, for a specific English letters, English word, or an ASCII word, and they would need legally to protect their trademark. Probably they would, on some level, need also to have the Hebrew equivalent that they use usually. So then it looks like in this case it's not too different for me, because the similarities are not too close. It will be relevant in cases of other languages that have Latin Latin letters in them, and then those IDNs would probably be very, very problematic. But in the more far scripts, I don't think it would be would make more problems.
Look, it would be absolutely great. If we can identify problems that are truly unique to IDN, and I mean truly, that would be great, because that gives us something clearly to focus on.
Okay.
So to Aubrey's question, I have not heard a definition of an answer other than perhaps such a case does not exist. Aubrey, that's I guess what I've been hearing here.
Yeah, I mean the difference is you're talking about 250 or whatever 1,000 languages instead of one.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we're talking probably at one language at a time, though.
I'm not following you, Aubrey.
Well, I mean, unless we're mixing all the languages in a label, what we're really talking about is one language at a time. And yes, we may be talking about a lot of languages, but when we're not compounding the problem to such a level of complexity that we're throwing all possibly confusing character symbols, what have you, into the same label. We're talking about, at least I assumed you were still talking about, single labels, single set of characters, each one of them having some confusing aspects on the nature of the type of 0 and O. We don't necessarily know them all. We could probably safely assume that every script has some of these confusions in them that will need to be dealt with, just as 0 and O need to be dealt with. So
I mean,
we're dealing with the whole basket all at once.
Well, right, but we are dealing on a comparative basis. What's been happening in UDRP cases involving IDNs is you're essentially comparing an ASCII string to an IDN string and deciding whether that meets the bad faith and legitimate interest tests of the UDRP.
Okay, and that indeed is the extra piece that is IDN, is that you have can have a complete string in a different script that looks the same as a script as a label in another script.
There are fonts in which the Hebrew Samech looks like an O. There are fonts in which the Hebrew Vav looks like an L. So these circular things and these vertical things just abound in the various scripts that are used. And it is possible artfully, if your intention is deceptive, probably to mimic a whole bunch of scripts with a whole bunch of other scripts, not putting any numbers on it, including Hebrew being confused with Latin.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you know, I think it would be great for this group to continue looking at that issue, because we really do have the sort of expertise in this group to think about that, that would be a big aid to the other group.
So that sounds to me like that's what's significant, is the script-to-script, you know, identical-looking strings.
Terry, one day you'll need to tell me how do you know so much about Hebrew?
I don't know anything about Hebrew. I don't understand the word of it, but I don't know something about the script.
Okay.
Ram, can I just add something into that?
Please.
Sophia, it's not adding, but I was just saying it looks like, you know, there are two groups parallel. There's the UDRP expertise there, and then there is the IDN working group of ICANN, you know, looking at sort of the same thing. But what Michael is suggesting is we're sort of outsourcing, if that's the right word to use, let's outsource the work to the expertise that are actually dealing with this on a daily basis. And then I think you mentioned that during the O5 meeting also in LA, right? And let's just create the liaison function to bring in the issues from the UDRP as well as the IDN working group and see if, you know, we could. I don't think we can, even in our group, I don't think we can be able to address this, even create that policy to a point where we would look at every language and there's a statement that would cover everything. I mean, that is my personal opinion of the linguistics. And we will have a problem of making decision. ICANN will have if there are, you know, even 50 languages at the TLD level that, you know, somebody needs to apply for. I mean, you need, how are you going to prioritize it? Based on language, based on which one is considered, you know, a high priority language? Are we going to have 5 languages like the UN? Which language are we going to pick? So the best way, I think, is to use the UDRP process and create that liaison function that will strengthen the relationship and the idea sharing of both groups. And I think, Michael, is that what you're suggesting?
That's exactly what I'm suggesting. I mean, to the extent there's expertise in this group that can feed into the other group, then yes, let's pursue it, absolutely.
As long as we see transparently what the other group is doing on a briefing on a regular basis and somebody has the time on this group and the concern enough to make that point, you know, you are probably will be interested in everything that if there's a thing about policy on the Hebrew language or anything that touches upon that, and I'll be interested in anything on Amharic, which is the Ethiopian language, and that sort of thing. So, I mean, that's an excellent base to start from, so we don't have to replicate information and work and so forth. So,
thank you. I'm going to request two things. One is that perhaps Maria, if you could extract Mike's proposal and you know, pass it on to Mike, as well as to, and just copy me on it, and let's make sure that it's accurate, and then have that proposal be placed in front of our working group for input, and then kind of move forward on this particular topic. I noticed that we are at the conclusion of the second hour of our call here, and I'd like to draw this meeting to a close. And I'd like to kind of set the stage for what we plan to do next week, which will be at the earlier hour in the morning, my time, but it'll be an earlier hour in the day or a later hour, depending on where you're at. And next week, our plan is to discuss technopolicy details and then to spend some time discussing the draft outcomes report that we'll have in front of you and start to arrive at, you know, areas where we agree and areas where we disagree on it and move forward from there. I also recommend that if you believe that there are other topics that are worthy of discussion that have not yet been discussed in our working group so far, that you present them to the list and that you help initiate and stoke the discussion on the list directly. We are moving into our last 3 weeks of the working group, and our focus is swiftly going to move to outcomes rather than only discussions. With that, I'd like to bring the call to a close. Thank you for your time, and look forward to seeing you in a week's time on the call and before that on the working group. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.